supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. We used to use the term blended families. We still do in many circles. But really? Do people really blend? So you've got her with her ex-husband and her biological parents and two children. He has an ex-wife who cheated on him, and he's got two sons, one of whom is a troubled teen, and his father's an alcoholic. Do we really blend? Really? Can we put all these people in a device and come out with an instant family smoothie? But what we can do is create something new, which takes time, patience, respect, and is heavy on understanding. On today's show, we're going to talk about stepfamily relationships with psychotherapist Dr. Patricia Papernail. She's written Surviving and Thriving in Stepfamily Relationships, What Works and What Doesn't. Patricia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And we'd like to hear from you also. Our number is 888-477-9499. Are you in a stepfamily? New or a well-established one? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Also, if you grew up in one, we'd love to hear from you. Well, Patricia, stepfamilies are born of love and hope, but they're formed in the wake of either divorce or death, and both parties wish to begin anew. But, you know, they've also got their own histories. It could be grief or betrayal, like I said, or some other form of suffering. So we come in with what? Cautious optimism?
Well, what I often see is that the cautious optimism for the adults is there, but often in the background, adults are often thrilled to have found each other. You know, somebody may have been a single parent for a long time, or may have been alone or in a bad marriage. And one of the things that's hard in the beginning is that it's a fundamentally different structure upon which to build family relationships, and that language of blending really, really leads us astray, and especially for kids, because kids, even though the grown-ups are pretty thrilled, kids often have a much harder time. The adjustment is more major for kids than many kids.
Yeah, I mean, it's a brand new love for a parent is quite possibly a brand new loss for the biological child.
You've got it exactly right, Dan. You know, if you're newly in love, well, here's what I say to the adults. Think about it. Have you ever had a friend who fell madly in love and you were alone, you didn't have a new partner or a partner, and you're at lunch with your friend and his or her new partner, and they are gooing at each other, gaga-ing at each other, and you're left there. I mean, how do you feel? Like, kind of like chopped meat. Do you really want to watch them hold hands? Do you really want to watch them kiss? And now imagine you're a small child, and you really, or even an adult child. Do you really don't want to watch your parent recouple? It's a loss for kids.
Well, you don't want to watch, or even biological parents lock lips, but, you know, to have a biological parent lock lips with a strange man or woman, ugh, it's disgusting.
Exactly. And you know what the adults often say? The parent often says, I want to set a good example for my child of a loving relationship. His mom and I were in a loving relationship. And it makes a lot of sense, theoretically, but kids don't experience it that way.
Yeah.
They experience it as a loss. You're right.
Well, I got to tell you, it's very early in the show, and you just planted in my head the idea of my parents locking lips, and I'm really nauseous right now. I'm going to have
that
to...
That didn't thrill you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to work through that. Patricia, I liked it that you talk about the life cycle of stepfamily. So take us to the beginning and early stages. What happens? What are the pitfalls?
Well, in the early stages, the strong pre-existing relationship is between the parent and his or her child. The pre-existing relationship in terms of those deep channels of attachment, the six-lane highway of attachment, and the understandings about what's a loud noise, is grapefruit, grape nuts, are grape nuts a form of cardboard or breakfast cereal? What kind of lights do you hang on the tree? Do you have a tree? Those agreements lie between the parent and his or her children.
What do you mean? So let's play this out with the family. What does that look like? How do we screw it up, and how can we avoid the pitfalls?
Well, what it looks like, especially early on, is that it's the holiday time. If you celebrate Christmas, stepmom hangs white lights on the tree. The child is used to colored lights and completely falls apart. The parent understands where the child is coming from. Where the child comes and the step-parent is totally left out of all of this and kerfuffled, really upset. The parent is torn between their kids upset and their new partner's upset, and the step-parent's kind of left out of it all. And that happens over and over and over again.
You described a scenario in your book that probably every family therapist has seen. A man's in his second marriage, his biological children come for the weekend because he's got weekend visitation, and he devotes all of his time and energy to his children and less to his new wife. And then the children expect complete attention, and she's on the outside. I've had experience where the children really take advantage of this and can be hostile towards the step parent. Everybody.
Well, you can see it as the children taking advantage. And however, now think about it from the child's point of view. You know, I'm a kid. The person I need is my parent, not my step parent. For me, a new step parent is my dad is turning away towards this stranger. She likes food we don't like. He's tweeting with her or calling her or emailing her, texting her at night instead of being with us. To us, we need him, not her. And so every time he turns to her, we're left out. And those losses mean that children really don't feel very welcoming of a step parent. And now add, my kids seem to have, I call it a loyalty bind. If I care for this new stepmom, I've betrayed my mom. And that happens even when there's not conflict. So I'm not real thrilled about this step-parent. And I may look like I'm behaving badly, but really I'm struggling.
All right.
And I'm not being very nice about it.
All right, you're the expert. You wrote the book, so go fix it. What do we do?
Well, two things. The first is that language of blending would make you imagine that you'd fix this by spending more time together. It seems reasonable. In fact, what works is a lot of one-to-one time. You know, if it works fine when you're there as a family, great. But if it doesn't, keep it short. Make sure the adult couple has time alone together. Make sure the parent and child have time together. And make sure that the step-parent and step-child have some time together without the parent present. That's probably one of the most basic things. I call it compartmentalizing rather than blending. And it meets the needs of every relationship, because the relationships are competing when they're all in the same room.
We're talking about step-families with Patricia Papernow, who's written the book on, it's called Surviving and Thriving in Step-Family Relationships. We'd love to hear from you. Are you in a step-family? Our number is 888-477-9499. Are you a step-child, a step-parent, or did you grow up in a step-family? We'd love to hear from you. We've got a couple of lines open, and we'll be going to the phones in just a few minutes. Patricia, you talk a lot about insiders and outsiders. What are they?
Well, it's the stuff we've been talking about, that every time a child enters the room or the conversation, the parent is pulled in. You know, these are my kids. My kid comes off the bus. She's thrilled that she won at soccer or upset she didn't win at soccer, and she comes to me. I'm there talking to my new partner. I turn away from her toward my kid. It feels natural to me as a parent. Step-parents are then left out, and it happens over and over and over and over again, day in and day out. So step-parents are stuck outsiders. Same is true with ex-wives, by the way. And outsiders feel invisible. They feel left out. And the parent is the stuck insider. Insiders feel pulled. They often feel inadequate because they cannot meet the needs of all the people they care about at the same time. And that's the stuck insider-outsider dynamic. And it's, you asked me about step-family development, is very strong in the beginning. And it softens over time, although it can reappear at, you know, weddings, college discussions about college costs, those kinds of major transitions.
Most step-parents, because of their own anxiety, well, most biological parents, because of their own anxiety, kind of force the children to like their new step-parent. I'm trusting that's not a good idea. And by the way, can't we find a better word than step-parent?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question because, to me, I mean, it has a lot of yucky connotations, you know, from Sleeping Beauty and all the others. However, to me, it's an accurate word if we can take away the negative connotation. As a step-parent, I am a step removed, and it's going to take me time to make a connection. And by the way, later on in the family, if things go well, and I've taken it slow as a step-parent, and I've gone for a connection before correction, I haven't stepped too soon into discipline.
You went too fast. Yeah, those words, those.
Right.
So if you, what? If you don't try to force anything?
Well, you can reach out and get to know your stepchild. Know that some kids may be more available than others. You know, if I'm a child who's very, very close to my mom, I'm going to have a little harder time moving towards my stepmom, but my younger brother may have an easier time. So what I say to step-parents is take it slow. Take time alone with your step-kids. And connection before correction, meaning the research is really clear. The parent has to remain the disciplinarian.
Yeah,
that's hard.
When I first had my first studied step families, when I was learning to be a family therapist, close to 40 years ago, the instructor said the step parent should be more like an aunt or an uncle.
That's great that you got some good advice as a clinician.
Yeah.
Clinicians don't get good advice often. Yeah, get to know the stepchild. And spend time alone and know that some kids are going to be less accessible. And you might need extra support. You might need to reach for your partner. Give me a hug. That was hard. She came in and didn't even say hello to me.
Let's go to the phones. We've got several people want to join the conversation. We have Susan ready? Susan, hi. Hi.
Hi, I was just calling to share my experience as a stepmother. I became a stepmom about 15 years ago, and I was pretty young at the time. I was only about 22. I've often sort of joked that, you know, now that I'm pushing 40, I'm not sure I would do it all over again. But 15 years into it, you know, it has been one of the most significant learning experiences for me and my stepdaughter. It's one of the great joys of my life now. So my biggest advice...
Your biggest
really
advice
to love your stepchildren first and then learn to like them and remember that blending a family, it's not in a microwave, it's a slow cooker.
So let's hear about the joys and difficulties early on, Susan.
Well, when I came on the scene, she was 13, which I think that just sums up some difficulties right off the bat.
Oy.
She had recently had some bad experiences with the stepfather on the other side, and I don't think that she was necessarily looking. I think it was more like, you know, she was saying, "Oi, another one now." But to her credit, she has a huge heart, and she was always very open to me. And now she's one of my best friends. She's now 29, and I'm 38, and I don't know what I'd do without her. And I mean that.
So I want to pick up on your question, Patricia. Patricia asked, what did you learn, Susan? What was the learning? What can you teach?
Was exceptional preparation for becoming a parent, which I now, you know, we now have a 9-year-old who also adores her big sister. It was patience. It was tolerance. Maturing and just realizing, you know, there are lots of different ways to look at the world and lots of different ways to love and to just, you know, I think I'm a lot less rigid because of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm probably a better mom because of having had that experience prior to having a biological child.
Bless your heart, Susan. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you. Great show. Bye-bye.
I want to follow up on one thing that Susan said, Patricia, before we go to break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this understanding that we talk about and compassion, Of course that helps everything, but it's tough to find compassion for others when you're suffering.
You just put it beautifully. It's really true. You know, having some education, you know, some preparation about what's happening so that you don't tell yourself stories like the kid's a brat, my husband doesn't care about me. If you can tell us a different story, this child is struggling, it helps some. But suffering, you know, is painful when a child doesn't look at you. And her stepdaughter was at exactly the age that research tells us is most difficult. And they hung in. And she's now what I call an intimate outsider. Step-parents who hang in are close to their kids, their stepkids, because they know them. They're also often just a little bit outside and just slightly less triggered than their parents about things like boys.
Mm.
And it can be quite wonderful. It's very touching to listen to her describe that.
Mm. So let's take a break. When we come back, I got a bunch more questions, and we're going to have a bunch more callers. We're talking with Patricia Papernow. She's a psychologist in private practice in Massachusetts, and her new book's called Surviving and Thriving in Stepfamily Relationships, What Works and What Doesn't. Give us a call. We'd love to have you join our conversation. We're at 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Are you in a stepfamily? Were you? Or perhaps you're anticipating getting out into the dating scene after a divorce or death of a spouse. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Does your son or daughter come home drunk or high? Would you like to learn new ways of dealing with their drug or alcohol use? The Family Training Program works with parents of children age 12 to 25 to help them take control of their child's drug or alcohol problem. Held in Philadelphia by the Treatment Research Institute, a supporter of WHYY. More on the Family Training Program at 877-I-WORRY-2. That's 877-I-WORRY and the number 2, or online at iamconcerned.org. Devereaux is a proud supporter of WHYY. For more than 100 years, Devereaux has provided care to individuals with developmental disabilities and mental and behavioral health disorders. Devereaux's work also includes its full continuum of autism-specific programming for individuals of all ages, including residential services, community-based group homes, employment training, and support and educational programs. For more information on Devereaux's autism-specific services, devereaux.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. We're talking about stepfamilies with psychologist Patricia Papernow, and our number is 888-477-9499. Patricia, you are in a step family now, and your daughter actually hated your husband for years. You said that you actually kept them from hurting each other. How so?
Well, my husband had three kids from his first marriage. They were a little bit older, and they were mostly okay, at least for quite a while. My daughter was 12 and a half, 13, exactly the wrong age, and had had a very painful relationship with her own dad. So she was thrilled with my husband for about 3 weeks.
Mm.
And then all heck broke loose. They could barely be in the same room with each other. And, you know, there was nothing I could do to make them care for each other. Not even, you know, a nationally recognized expert cannot change that. What I could do was say to him, you know, honey, I know he was very upset with her behavior often. You can't step in. You got to tell me, and I will make my decision and step in or not. And you can't call her names. You can say, I'm having a hard time. You can't say you're being a brat. And I said to her, I know you're not thrilled about him. And, honey, when he walks into the room, you got to say hello. I know it's hard, but you got to say hello, and that doesn't mean to his shoes. That means look him in the eyes and say hello, and I know it's hard. And then I spent a lot of time alone with each of them, and it was hard. It was really hard.
Yeah, it was painful for both of them. So what was it like for you? I mean, you say hard. You know, I've been in that position. Hard doesn't begin to describe it.
You got it.
Torture comes a little
closer. Torture is right. And, you know, I was a step-parent in my first marriage. This is my second marriage. And I thought that was harder because I was left out. However, actually, I was never really anxious in that position. I kind of knew I'd get in. I was the stuck insider in my family of origin. Like many therapists, I was the one who was supposed to take care of everybody. So when I met my husband and my second husband, and he and my daughter couldn't stand each other, torture is exactly the right word, Dan. It was so painful and it made me incredibly anxious.
Yeah, because we're not the only ones, we therapists, I mean, we're wired to, you know, take care of our family. And in your case, your husband and your daughter, and you just weren't doing it.
I couldn't do them both at the same time. I turned towards one and the other would be upset. I could. Now, here's where my therapist training came in helpful. My daughter would say, he's being horrible, and he had been maybe sharp because we didn't do the newspapers the way he's used to putting the old newspapers. So I could say to her, yeah, honey, he was sharp. No, not he was a terrible person. He was sharp, and that must have been tough for you. I'm sorry. And when he said, she is being a brat, I could, instead of arguing with him or saying, yeah, she's a brat, I could say, you know, I know this behavior is really tough for you, honey. It's hard. I'm so sorry. Will you take a hug? So I could empathize with each of their feelings without turning them against each other.
Yeah, my tendency and my experience is to kind of normalize being a gargantuan pain in the butt.
And how do you do that?
Well,
that's great. I love it.
Yeah, like, yeah, your mom's a pain in the butt right now. And tell me you're not a pain in the butt sometimes. You know, and you can't say no to that.
That's true.
So at this moment, she's a pain in the butt. And the next moment, it's you. So, you know, it kind of normalizes it. Hey, listen, quickly, speaking of normalizing things, you talk about people need to be educated when they come in with unrealistic expectations, and the blending thing is one of the prime unrealistic expectations. So what do you teach new stepfamilies?
Well, the first thing is that letting go of that fantasy of blending is a grief. You know, it's a loss. I mean, so for some people, it's a relief. Oh, you mean it's going to take a couple of years? Oh, thank goodness. And for other people, it's, oh, no, that's not what I got married for. So the first thing that I do is watch for the grief, because it can be awfully disappointing. And then I give them the same little rap I gave you about how first-time families and second-time families are different. And depending on what they're most interested in, there are five major challenges that come out of this structure, and I can tell them a little bit about each of them and what works and what doesn't. And there's a lot of, I call them blogger boo-boos, there's a lot of misinformation out there that the web multiplies exponentially. So there are a couple of sort of basic things that are really helpful to know, like that one-to-one thing that we just talked about, like the, you know, adults feel they ought to be able to discipline, and single parents are often tired and would like help from a step-parent, but step-parent has to remain the disciplinarian. Step-parent has input.
All right, so let me ask you this. I'm in your office.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, my new wife doesn't like my kids. She's judgmental, and she's angry at me. So, Dr. Papernow, how long do I hang in there before, you know, I realize this is torture for everybody?
Well, how about we find a different way to hang in there? And the first thing is, this is really, really painful. And can I help you understand what's happening, first of all, so we can understand what's happening to your wife? Can I help you understand a little bit? We know something about this. Are you interested? I usually make people beg for me to tell them stuff.
All right. I'll listen for a minute, but you better be good.
Okay, I'll do my best. The headline is, yeah, this is painful and hard, and there are some things you can do. So you want the good news or the bad news first?
Good news.
Okay, the good news is, spend some one-to-one time with your wife away from your kid, and spend some one-to-one time with your kid. And can we, for a moment, can I help you understand what might be happening inside your wife that she is being so yucky? Can you imagine what it feels like?
Is there anybody in the system that cares about what's happening inside of me?
And are you saying that as the parent?
Uh-huh.
Yes, and how what's happening inside of you and what's happening inside of your wife is entirely different, and I'll bet it's not what you expected. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so you want me to hang in there a little longer. It's no wonder that, you know, the divorce rate in second marriages is even a little higher than first marriages.
Yeah, it is no wonder. The challenges are really intense. And, you know, people like me I didn't write for two decades between my two books. The information isn't out there. You know, we have good information about lots of things. We don't have good information about stepfamilies out there. It's one of the reasons that I decided to write another book, even though I promised myself I'd never do it again.
Oh, yeah, we know about those premises.
Do we?
So we've been alluding to this 13-year-old child. Let's talk about how this plays out depending on the age of the child. What about younger children? Is it easier for them and more difficult for adolescents?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because the research is telling us that it's easier for boys than for girls, and it's easier for kids under 8 than older children, and it's especially difficult for early teen girls, like my daughter and your caller's daughter. And by the way, it can also be very difficult for young adult children and adult children. And we add that category for your callers of later life recouplers, people who recouple, you know, baby boomers.
Well, that's happening more and more now.
That's
actually
right.
The incidence of marriages, divorce and marriages taking place post-50 is skyrocketing. So
you're absolutely right. The rate is generally dropping a little of both divorce and marriage in the general population, rising over 50. Divorce, remarriage, and redivorce.
So one would hope adult children would be happy for their parents.
You would hope, but you'd be surprised. I just had three consultation cases in a row where dad recoupled and a daughter fell apart. In one case, it was right away, and another case, it was after 10 years when stepmama got pregnant with her second baby. And what was true in all of these cases is dad and daughters had a bit of a compromised relationship to start with.
Right, right.
And then you add a stepmom, and it's pretty stunning.
Yeah, you know, Patricia, the problem with people like you and me is the ones we see in our office are the ones that are struggling and the ones that, you know, form and are happy and, you know, the children are thrilled. We don't get to see them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. One of the things that was really important to me in this book was to tell those stories, too. The stories about where it went easily or the stories about people finding their way through, sometimes with some struggle, but hanging in and finding their way through. Those stories, like your caller, really touch me, and I think they're important to tell. What does it look like when it goes well?
Yeah.
Really important to tell those stories.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Gary on the line. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Dr. Dan. I can't, you know, it's interesting that you said that young children are easily deal with it. Well, I didn't. I was 5 years old and a boy, and my mother got divorced, and I was an only child. And I will tell you that that has played hell on my life.
How
because
so?
I felt abandoned, betrayed by both my mother and my father, and she quickly remarried. Well, not quickly, but she had a dating period, which was disorienting for me because suddenly I was with babysitters and I never was before. And here was this stranger. And this stranger made the big mistake of disciplining me. He thought he was going to show my mother that I wasn't going to get away with anything. And I was just being a kid. And I have to say that my mother stood up and said, "You will not discipline this child, I will." And I'm happy for that. But what it did was, and it, I won't go into the process, but what it did was eventually he never became my father. He never became anything. I called him by his first name. He was this person who lived in my house, and I was her child to him. And we had this dance for years where we pushed each other away. We sort of tolerated each other. It's only now, and I'm 69 going on 70, that I have actually started in the last couple of years. We've actually become father and son.
Why?
Well, for one reason, it was a simple thing. I started to call him Dad.
Why?
Why? Because I could look back and see, I'm going to cry. I look back and see he was a good man, and he was always faithful to my mother, and he was good. He sacrificed for me, and even though he may not have my DNA, he was a decent person, and he is, still is. He's with my mother. He's in his late 80s. My mother's 91. And he deserves that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Gary, it's so heartbreaking that we get so locked into seeing things the way we see them. And, you know, we're not able to see the big picture. It is just heartbreaking. You know, I hear.
Well, and a little kid can't really see the big picture. You've got somebody being hard on you. And they're losing your mom, and it's hard.
Yeah,
it's nice that you have over time.
Yeah, we hold on to that too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, Gary, thank you so much for for your story and sharing your heart with us.
Thank you.
Bye bye. yeah, we hold on. We hold on to our stories, whether we're in step families or not, the stories that made us feel good or safe or right when we were kids. We hold on to them whether they work for us or not.
It's true. They get stuck in our bodies, even.
Yeah,
it's
literally in our bodies.
Yeah.
We're talking about stepfamilies today on Voices in the Family with psychologist Patricia Papernail. Her new book is called Surviving and Thriving in Stepfamily Relationships, What Works and What Doesn't. Give us a call. We're at 888-477-9499. If you are or were or about to be in a stepfamily, we'd love to hear from you. Well, we'll be back after a very short break. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Keystone Clinical Studies of Norristown is conducting a clinical research trial for adults who suffer from major depressive disorder. If you are between 18 and 65 suffering from major depressive disorder, and if your current medication is not working, you may be eligible to participate in this clinical research trial. Participants will receive investigational drug and study-related evaluations. 610-277-8073, 610-277-8073, or KeystoneClinicalStudies.com. Keystone Clinical Studies supports WHYY.
Devereaux is a proud supporter of WHYY. For more than 100 years, Devereaux has provided care to individuals with developmental disabilities and mental and behavioral health disorders. Devereaux's work also includes its full continuum of autism-specific programming for individuals of all ages, including residential services, community-based group homes, employment training, and support and educational programs. For more information on Devereaux's autism-specific services, devereaux.org.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host, talking with psychologist Patricia Papernail about stepfamilies. Let's go right to the phones. We've got Susie on the line. Hi, Susie.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. What can we do for you?
So I'm in a relationship with someone, and he's very present in our lives. We have three children total. My oldest is not his. She wants more of a relationship with him. I can tell because of conversations that we have. However, getting him to be active more in her life individually by himself without me is a challenge. I often speak to him about it. However, nothing ever happens. Nothing comes of our conversations.
Do you know why?
I don't know if he's like, our two other children are like babies, basically. So I don't know if he's just not ready yet. I just don't know.
All right. Well, let me suggest something before we go to the expert, Susie. When I ask you a question and you say, I don't know, in response, that makes me happy because that opens a door that we can knock on and be curious about him. Why isn't he? If you can release your grasp on trying to get him to change his behavior, why doesn't he? There's something going on inside of him that you don't know. So be curious about that. See what you can learn from him first. Patricia?
Oh, you just put it beautifully, Dan. And it's not easy to be curious, is it, when your partner, new partner, is not loving in the way you would want him to be with your daughter. And it sounds like your daughter is open and he's having a hard time. So I love what you said, Dan, and it's not easy to do, is it, to really put that, the pain that you're feeling, kind of hold it in your arms and comfort it while you really try to open your heart to understanding, helping your husband or partner talk to you about something's hard about this. Something's hard about it. Can you help me understand?
Yeah, it's something that you don't understand. And perhaps he doesn't even understand.
That's right. He may not even have language for it.
Right.
It may be several conversations. And you may not like what you hear. And how to take a breath if your partner says, you know, I'm just not ready, or it's too hard, or that's not easy to hear, right?
Susie, how's this sound to you?
I've never thought about him possibly not being aware of how to express what he's feeling or thinking. He may, like you said, he might not even be aware of it himself to be able to relate to me. So I've never thought about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around with that gender. I forget what. Oh, yeah, guys. It happens. It's not infrequent for men
to. And what's that like for you to open to that? Does that change things for you a little bit?
Yeah, for Susie.
A great deal. Yes.
Great.
So now I'll be doing some research about how to help him become more communicative. Because he isn't to begin with.
Don't help him. Don't help him at all. Just be curious.
And see if you can mirror back what he's saying and really try to take it in your body and feel it rather than change it or fix it. And I'm the expert. I can tell you when my husband says things I don't like, I want to change it and fix it. So it's not easy to do, but take a crack at it and see what happens.
Wish you the best, Susie. Let's continue with our callers here, Patricia. We'll go right to Jen. Hey, Jen.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
What can we do for
you? Well, I'm calling. My fiancé and I have... I had two daughters who are 8 and 10, and his daughter is 9, and we have one together who's 1 year old. The issue we're having is that we've recently had my stepdaughter come to our home for overnight, and it seems that there's a constant competition between my two daughters for her attention and approval, and it's a lot like when they have a friend for a sleepover. So I just want to know if Patricia had any advice for trying to help that transition in. To get my stepdaughter to be kind of less of a novelty to my own two children who are together all the time.
Yeah, three girls. Patricia, I'm going to back out of this one.
How old is your stepdaughter?
She is 9, and my girls are 8 and 10.
Uh-huh. So she's the oftentimes the stepchild feels like the stuck outsider, but it sounds like this stepchild is the, she's the prize. You know, you might try creating some one-to-one time between each of your daughters and your stepdaughter. Can you pull that off sometime when two rather can be together rather than three? Three's a hard number, especially among girls.
It is. Yeah, we
tell you about it, right?
And it tends to even at nighttime. We have bunk beds in one room and one bed in the other, and you know, we've had to come up with a schedule for who gets to sleep in the rooms at the same time. And
does that help?
We're kind of hoping it does a little bit. Last weekend we had my stepdaughter alone, and she ended up waking the whole house up, you know, to play with everyone. So, I mean, it's somewhat like a sleepover, you know, like a birthday party every time. So, I mean, we could try that, try doing it more to where it was just two of them together.
And having a schedule that everybody knows what it is can help. And, you know, the plain old parenting, which is for the kid that's left out, is hard to be left out. Nobody likes being left out. It's very hard. And I don't know if there's something you can do with that left out child so that child feels at least understood by you.
Right. And I had kind of a follow-up question as well. Just in our house, because of the way the schedule goes, we generally do chores on a Saturday morning. And that's not really familiar to my stepdaughter from the way it is at her mom's house. Do you have any suggestions for kind of integrating her into some of the traditional things we do just to care for the home when she's with us?
Well, I think what's great is that you know that it's not familiar to your stepdaughter. You know, it would be worst if when I hear somebody say it's my home, she should be able to do this. It's simple. You get that this is new for your stepdaughter. So that's where to start. You know, as the
it's a huge adjustment for her. So maybe to find something small for her to begin with, and let her know that you get it's a huge adjustment, and let your girls know, you know, this is a big adjustment for what's your stepdaughter's name?
And finally, we're going to have to go and say goodbye to Jen, because we got so many callers on the line. But please, please keep in mind that this moment is a moment in the trajectory of this step family, and it's not the moment. So
it will change over time.
Yeah, no matter what, it will change over time. So let's go back to the phones, Patricia. We've got Raquel on the line. Hey, Raquel.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have a question. I am a grandmother. My daughter got divorced about a year and a half ago. My grandson is 3 years old, and he has some developmental delays. Father has a new girlfriend for the past maybe 6 months or so. And I want to know if it has any negative effect on my grandson for them to encourage my grandson to call the girlfriend Mama. I feel he has his own mother.
Patricia?
He doesn't need two mothers.
Patricia?
Yeah, it sounds like your son-in-law and his new partner really, I call it circling the wagons, they really want to make like a first-time family. And so to at least take a moment to understand the wish for this your son-in-law to make a new family. But most kids have different names for their mom and their stepmom. And a lot of kids do feel, if I'm supposed to love this one, have I betrayed that one, especially between a mom and a stepmom. So to understand why they're longing for that, and it might be easier for the child to have a different name for each so that the child doesn't feel she or he has to choose between his mom and his stepmom, knowing that they want the best for him. What's the best for him is to begin to make a relationship with stepmom, but maybe to have a different name for her so there's room for both.
Yeah, and to keep in mind that the issue, more than the labels, is the relationship and the spirit behind it. Raquel, I hope it was helpful. Hey, I wanted to bring up an issue about grandparents, because I am also one of them. So an average child has four grandparents, and things get complicated with step-parents and step-grandparents and biological grandparents. So what happens when a father leaves the marriage and only has visitation of his children, say, every other weekend? Where does that leave the grandparents? 'Cause they're still grandparents.
They are still grandparents. They are more likely to lose connection because moms tend to be the gatekeepers. And, you know, grandparents have to find a way to keep reaching out to their former daughters-in-law. And it's not always very easy. You're exactly right.
So that's the issue. It's reaching out to their former daughters-in-law.
If you can. You know, it's not easy if you're feeling rejected. But it is. The research is that grandparents are good for kids, especially during single parenting and in that transition time. Grandparents are good for kids.
Before,
it's not easy to share.
I've got to ask you, and this didn't come up on the show earlier, but I want to talk about stepfamilies with minority groups like gay or lesbian couples or people of an ethnic or economic minorities. Is there any research about this?
We're just beginning to develop the research. We probably have more on gay and lesbian couples because of Nan Gartrell's long-term research. Gay and lesbian couples have many of the same challenges that straight couples do. Depending on whether there was a committed legal relationship, the rate of conflict may be about the same. It tends to be a little lower if there was a legal relationship in the previous relationship. Oftentimes, stepmothers in lesbian relationships are a little more good at being able to step back and put the child first. Oftentimes, kids sometimes go from a gay, you know, two gay parents break up to another gay relationship, but often it was a heterosexual marriage broke up, and now the parent is dating or involved with somebody who is lesbian or gay or trans or bi. And so it's a double transition for some kids.
I read, speaking of research, that the majority of children who grow up in step families do well and may be even more resilient than others.
Yeah, the initial research shows slightly lower well-being for kids in step families as opposed to first-time families. Mm. However, what turns out to make the difference is not family structure, it's family process. The level of conflict makes all the difference in the world. So if you have, even with young adults, if you have a young adult in a never-divorced, high-conflict couple of parents, as opposed to a young adult in a 10-year divorce, low-conflict parents, the second child is doing adult child is doing better than the first. So over time makes a big difference in step families. Over time, when things go well enough, kids do fine and they learn a lot. And now they've got, you know, two different houses, each with a couple and eight grandparents. And over time, if parents and ex-spouses can keep the level of conflict low, and if they can keep the parenting quality up, that means connected and setting moderately firm limits.
Well,
that's
a great way to end the show. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
A pleasure to be here and to be with you.
Thank you. We've been talking about step families with psychologist Patricia Papernow. Next week on Voices in the Family, we're going to hear from three experts who share their expertise on peace psychology, psychology's role in global conflict and diminishing it. Well, you can find us at whyy.org/voices, and we're also on Twitter at Voices in the Fam, and I'm at drdangottlieb.com. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Adam Staniszewski. Thank you, Adam. Elizabeth Perez-Luner is our executive producer of audio content. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn is our producer. And Emily Haas is our production assistant. I'm Dan Gottlieb. Hey, enjoy your week, my friends.